Welcome to today's Innovative Ideas podcast. My name is Paul Howard, and I'm the director and senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute's Center for Medical Progress. Our guest today is James C. Capretta, a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, as well as a former associate director at the White House Office of Management and Budget from 2001 to 2004, where he had responsibility for healthcare, social security, education, and welfare programs. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Glad to be with you again.
Jim, there's this little issue of the Supreme Court ruling on Obamacare, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, over the next, sometime in the next week to 10 days. The last day of its term is officially June 25th, although court watchers expect the ruling to come down anytime a couple days after that, potentially, sometime 27th or 28th, or as early as this coming Monday or this Thursday, this coming Thursday. The scenarios that I'd like to walk through with you and get your feedback on are what the potential decisions to come down, at least the most likely decisions to come out of the court, are going to be, and then what are the potential policy responses from Congress, and then potentially also from the White House, to those different decisions. And let's track them in order of, easiest and least complex to most complex.
Right, very good. Well, first of all, I think this is important to realize, and your listeners need to know that this is going to be a huge event. I mean, it's going to be others have said, and I have said it myself, that it's going to be a political earthquake one way or the other. So no matter what the court decides, I think it's one of those events in Washington that's going to have pretty significant and far-reaching political and policy implications one way or another. That's why everybody's on pins and needles about it, waiting to hear what they have to say. Now, the first scenario that I sort of outlined is the scenario that opponents of the law sort of are loath to consider, but really they have to consider because it's a real possibility, which is the court upholds the whole thing. You know, despite the fact that during oral arguments, they seem to poke a lot of holes in the administration's arguments, it's still entirely possible that they come out in 10 days' time or so and say, you know what, this is within the bounds of existing constitutional law. And if they do that, it's going to change the conversation quite a bit. I think, first of all, President Obama will get a huge lift out of this because I think he'll be able to say to the public through the media that, look, you know, this thing's now been fought politically in Congress. It's been fought in the courts. It's passed the Congress. The courts have found it to be constitutional. It's the law of the land. We're headed toward implementation. You know, it's time, quote unquote, to move on. So I think he'll try to use it as, you know, very much validation of what he did. And I think he'll get a very big boost out of it politically as well as in, you know, substantive sense.
But it's also the status quo. In a sense.
And it's the status quo, but I mean, I think the public. There's a lot of the public that resist the law for very good reasons. You know, I'm obviously a strong opponent of the law, but I guess I'm just trying to describe that if it gets validated by the Supreme Court, it'll give the law and President Obama a big boost. I think a portion of the public will take that information. The Supreme Court reviewed it and found it constitutional, as being, you know, pretty firm validation that, well, maybe this thing's okay after all. And I think its popularity, although still low, might rise somewhat from where it is now. Now, in terms of policy, though, I think what this will do is put tremendous pressure back on Governor Romney. That Governor Romney, is running for president, and health care is going to be a big issue. And if the court upholds the whole thing, I think Governor Romney, there'll be more pressure on Governor Romney to say, well, I want to repeal this, And I'm going to have to show why I want to repeal it and what I want to replace it with. And so I think all eyes will focus back on him and say, okay, ball's in your court now. You want to be president. You want to get rid of this. What would you replace it with? I think he'll be pressed to be, you know, as fulsome as possible in that regard. Now, I'll just move on to the next scenario, if that's all right.
Sure.
The next scenario is that the court just strikes down just the individual mandate, which is, you know, maybe the most constitutionally suspect provision. That is the requirement that the government imposes on citizens to purchase private health insurance that the government, you know, mandates in terms of its size and scope. That was obviously debated very extensively in day two of the oral arguments, and, you know, a lot of people felt that the justices really poked a lot of holes in the administration's defense of that. So let's assume that just that goes. Now, One thing that's important to note here is that the administration told the court and the lower courts in earlier proceedings that if they struck the individual mandate, they needed to strike what's known as guaranteed issue and community rating as well. However, the court may ignore that. I think the administration made that argument to try to turn the heat up on the court. In other words, basically saying to the court, look, you can't just strike the unpopular individual mandate. If you get rid of that, you got to get rid of the popular stuff, too, that are attached to it, namely guaranteed issue, which requires insurers to offer the same insurance to everybody, regardless of their health status, and community rating, which narrows the premiums that they're allowed to charge to people based on their health status. So if the court strikes the individual mandate and leaves guaranteed issue and community rating in place, I think at that point the administration is very likely to respond by saying, you know what, yeah, it's true we made that argument to the court that these other things have to go too, but we can make this work. In other words, it's not a fatal flaw that the individual mandate is gone. And, we're going to get some duct tape out and some other things, and we're going to patch this thing up and make it as, workable as possible. In other words, they're going to try to make lemonade out of the lemon of a court decision in that regard.
And how much of that response, potentially, I think we're talking about here, if they wanted to go back and say, well, okay, we don't have the individual mandate, we're going to try and enact waiting periods, which some people on the left have suggested, for instance, Paul Starr, or others. I assume also the insurance industry is going to have an awful large incentive to come back and ask for some kind of regulations to prevent what's called adverse selection. So you're right, if the individual mandate is struck and healthy people say insurance is now just enormously expensive, we're going to sit out the market, and sick people flock to the exchanges, that creates this potential enormous death spiral. Prices keep going up because there are so many sick people in the market, healthy people keep sticking out. How much of that could potentially the administration do administratively, or would they have to go back to Congress?
I don't think they can do enough administratively to make it work. I'm dubious that it's going to work now, even with the individual mandate.
Because the mandate itself is actually so weak.
The mandate is very weak, but the psychological blow and the political blow of having it removed when everybody said it was essential to making it work, I think it's just going to contribute to a lot of states saying to themselves, hey, wait a second, if we set up these state exchanges, we're going to have a lot of adverse selection in the insurance market in those exchanges, and we're going to be left holding the bag. So even those states that have moved down the tracks to set up the state exchanges are going to begin to question, hey, I'm not sure I want to do this, because quite frankly, it's very evident from the states that have tried to do voluntary insurance with guaranteed issue and community rating, it's never, ever worked. It's been tried in at least a half a dozen states, including Washington State, Kentucky, and Maine. All three of them, it failed miserably, and they had to repeal the law. So I don't see any way that the administration will be able to create a positive narrative if the mandate is struck that, hey, we can make this work. I think the press and the opponents of the law will have a much easier time making the argument, hey, this thing is not wasn't workable before, and now even more so. It's really a disaster waiting to happen.
And so is there any possibility that they would go back to Congress, or that there would be any motion at all in Congress to try and address the problem? Would there be a compromise worked out there? Or is this an issue that for instance, on the right, Republicans would have an incentive to say, you know what, actually, let's just see what happens with the election, and then we'll decide what to do next?
I don't think any time, there's no compromise that's going to happen before the election. If they strike the mandate, the Republicans in Congress are going to say, hey, we need to get rid of the rest of it, too. This thing is so unstable and unworkable. Time to repeal the rest. And so they'll press for repealing the rest of the law as well. The administration certainly will say, no, we can make this work with some amendments, et cetera, we're not turning back, this kind of thing. But still there'll be a standoff through the election, and however the election turns out will probably determine quite a bit about, what's done with the mess that's left if the mandate goes.
What do you see happening if the court goes a little broader and perhaps it embraces either the administration's position, which is get rid of individual mandate, community rating, guaranteed issue, or if they go even farther than that, because obviously those provisions have an enormous effect on how the exchanges operate and you know, the balance of people who are going to go into Medicaid versus private insurance. It's complicated, but obviously that whole set of insurance regulations and subsidies are deeply intertwined in the first title of the Affordable Care Act. Let's say the court goes ahead and strikes all of that. What kind of effect do you think that will have on the debate and what happens potentially from the administration and Congress?
Well, I mean, I think if they go beyond the mandate and start to strike the other insurance provisions and maybe even reach to the subsidy structure or the state exchanges themselves, then they're really starting to get rid of the core of the whole healthcare law. And will, you know, let's assume that they did go that far and they got rid of maybe all of Title I, which includes the state exchanges and the premium credits and the insurance rules. If they did that, then what's left essentially is the big Medicaid expansion, the tax increases, and the Medicare changes, including a lot of Medicare cuts. So essentially what you have left is sort of budgetary provisions that affect the public programs, Medicare and Medicaid, as well as the tax side. That isn't much. I mean, they won't be able to hang their hat on much, and a lot of that is very, very unpopular, especially the Medicare cuts and the tax increases. So you'd have a remnant bill that would be, I think, even less popular than what was passed originally, and you know, they'll have a hard time defending that over the long term. It'll get nibbled at and changed over time, I would predict. But, you know, moreover, it'll be seen as a huge, huge defeat for the president and the administration, and that'll have a big political and psychological effect on the November election.
And then just a step back from this, I think there's going to be a follow-on discussion, no matter what. Well, let's say some of the scenarios you just outlined where some of the bill or perhaps the heart of it is taken out and is found unconstitutional. There's going to be a response, well, there is a problem here, quote-unquote, the uninsured, that the Republicans have done away with a potential solution that the president supported. But how do people who, like yourself and myself, support more free market-oriented solutions to the healthcare challenges come back and say, well, you know, these are actually practical solutions, and the president's plan obviously has been found unconstitutional in part or in whole, but also addressed sweeping changes, large, enormous tax changes, enormous cuts to Medicare, made an already complicated system more complicated, and didn't at the same time address some of the core challenges facing the country. What are the response from the market-oriented community going to be to say, actually, you know, we have better solutions to the problems that we're trying to tackle?
Well, you're putting your finger on a really important question, a huge issue, which is people in the center and on the right, so to speak, you know, need to coalesce around a practical alternative to this that gives people confidence it's going to address two big things, I think. One is, what do people with existing health conditions, what is done about the pre-existing condition problem, so to speak? And if you don't do a mandate-type approach, what's the solution? And I think people on the right and in the center can come up with a solution. I've tried to articulate what it would be in various pieces of writing I've done, but it basically boils down to trying to allow people who stay continuously insured to be guaranteed that their premium will never be affected by their health status. And I think that can be done, but you need to change state insurance regulation to conform to a national federal structure. And you also have to have some ability for people to stay continuously insured through reworking the tax treatment of health insurance to give people more tax credits to buy at least a catastrophic plan. So those are the basic elements of it. I think, you know, over time, I'm hopeful that people on the right will coalesce around such an approach. But there's also worries because it's complex, and it does involve a fair amount of disruption to the existing status quo for people's insurance arrangements. So there's a reluctance sometimes to embrace something that actually would be that big and would fix the problem in that manner. And so, you know, there's a debate, I would say, and you know, who's probably likely to resolve it is probably going to be the Republican nominee for president. You know, someone who's going to have the biggest challenge. I mean, he's going to be the one having to debate President Obama, and on healthcare and other matters. And so he's going to want to have to be probably the one who has to articulate what the replace alternative looks like in the coming months.
Well, and final thought, though, does it have to be, you know, I think the president, you know, really orchestrated through Congress with the support of the Democratic Party, obviously, an enormous change, which was, you know, quote unquote, designed to address, you know, the uninsured, but really just went very far beyond addressing, you know, some of the core problems I think you identified as, you know, people who are chronically uninsured, who have serious health conditions and cannot find affordable insurance either through existing employment structures or through existing public programs. Is there a middle road here which we frankly admit, look, we don't have all the solutions to every healthcare challenge on day one, and we're not likely to find that through a single federal approach right now at all anyway. You and I have talked about this in other podcasts. Go back to Medicaid reform as a template and say, we're going to make some modest changes to cover the people who we think are in the most serious situation right now. And then we're going to devolve a lot of responsibility to the states and have some experimentation and have a variety of approaches. And frankly, we're going to take some time to see what works.
Well, certainly the state element is a very big part of this. You know, I think you're absolutely right that allowing the states through the Medicaid program to do things that suit the desires of their own citizens more without so much federal red tape is certainly a big part of this. And this would allow a lot of experimentation and innovation at the state level. I very much agree with that. I do think that, I think we're basically saying the same thing, that to get over the threshold, I think we're probably going to have some credible response on people who have pre-existing conditions. And also, I think we need to make sure we make the argument and the case that the real solution here is to move toward a functioning marketplace in healthcare. If you have the discipline of a marketplace, then costs will moderate, quality will go up, all of the problems that exist will moderate to some extent, and it'll be easier to fix everything. So you do need a marketplace to actually function, and that's going to require a few changes that I think we're up to the challenge of implementing.
That's terrific. Let's leave it on that note, and let's also have another discussion after the Supreme Court rules sometime between now and the end of June.
That sounds great. I look forward to it.
Thanks for your time, Jim.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
Take care.